if someone is dealing with something that's similar to what I'm dealing with, and I tell them what they should do as the coach, but I'm not doing it in the background, then that turns me into an imposter in the back of my head, and that is Fucksville for a practitioner.
Connect with us on the Emotion Wellness Podcast for a transformative journey of human connection. Witness personal stories, improve your mental health education, and acquire valuable resources for optimizing your well-being. Delve into the raw and courageous narratives of individuals who have thrived through adversity, gained clarity amongst the ashes, and emerged with an unshakable mindset. Available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And visit emotionwellness.com for more information.
So we are here talking with Mark England with the Enlifted Method. And my name is Jason Turner. This is the Emotion Wellness Podcast. I'm super stoked, dude, that you're here. Like, you have not like, you have changed the way that I do business as a therapist. And I remember the first time I saw what you were doing. And my thought went like this. I wonder if he knows. I mean, I know you know how potent it is, all the work that you've done. I just didn't know any of your experience on the mental health side of things as far as... I think when you're looking at coaching and mindset, you can get a broad range of people, but I don't know how much you've done the Enlifted Method in with like high acuity mental health patients. And I'm seeing it in the substance use space as it's like a superpower from being a therapist. Like I've always felt like we were better than most as a program, just all the intention we put in. Mm-hmm. And now I know it. Like now I'm like, oh, okay. This thing is and I'm not throwing this around. I think this term gets thrown around a lot. And I'm super nervous about my words interviewing you right now, just thinking about, oh, I got to, you know, I'm always trying to catch him, but it's a game changer. Dude. It is a game changer.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, just y'all's attention, the whole, you got the, whatever the X factor is, y'all got that here. And being able to help get down to people's, the word level of the story. That is where the rubber meets the road. The words and the breath, which we just ran. When we got this thing on the calendar, I'm like, man, you know what would be super cool? Is if we ran the workshop and then went straight into a podcast. And then out to dinner. We did a similar thing on Monday, last Monday in Garland. So Justin Estes, he graduated that day. I drove in from Hot Springs, graduated his class.
Yeah, I was in it. I watched it. Because I missed that class because I was doing a talk, an Enlifted talk.
Yep. And then I walked out of that and walked straight into like out of the office and just walked straight in front of 20 people and gave an hour long workshop. And then we got in the car and went and did a podcast over at Spencer Nix's CrossFit gym. So we're similar to this. We're stacking them up.
Yeah, it's badass.
That's how you get good at things.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm really grateful that you're here.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah. The shows that I've been doing recently, and we're like the podcast that I created. This podcast is about personal stories of resilience and triumph over really difficult scenarios, a lot of mindset, and then education and resources. Mm. So sort of educating people, right? Part of that is the stories and the words. But the first three episodes that we taped were really an opportunity for, and it just so happens you fit this category. We haven't known each other a long time, but your impact on my life has been profound in the sense of how it's affected me. You know, you go through a cert, sometimes in my professional career, I've gone to trainings and I don't want to be there. They're not that engaging. They're mandatory. But when you go through a certification that's transformative in and of itself, which the Enlifted Method is certainly that, right? You're gonna get this thing. You're going to do it. There's this connection of the coach and the client, which was what I was when you were coaching me, and we went through some shit. Like there was some stuff in there. This I didn't come to the table with, you know, just trying to feel better. It was like I needed to get over some stuff. Started 2 years ago for me before I created Emotion, had the money for it. Worked so hard to change my story. I mean, I was, and this is a testament to your process. And I tell people this when I do my talks. I was doing and this is not for dramatic effect. I had come off the January 28th Whataburger parking lot, I'm going to take my life, to, okay, no one's coming, you better do some fucking work. Mm. And I did minimum 5 hours a day, over-ear headphones, affirmations, meditations. As soon as I woke up and before I went to bed and in between, I did affirmations in the mirror, staring at myself, saying, I love you, when I didn't believe it. I did all, I mean, I did it, everything I knew how to, I was grasping at anything. It kept me alive, and it moved the dial ever so slightly. And then I recently, the last 9 weeks doing the Unlifted process, I'm in a completely different spot. It has skyrocketed my process. So if we were doing that thing out here, the A to B, the years, if I was doing it, it would have been on my story. My identity is not the same. And I did in 8.5 weeks of getting certified in your process, I did in 8.5 weeks what it took me 9 months of it's a full-time job. I mean, think about it. 5 to 8 hours a day working
on
yourself.
That's hours on the clock, man. Music to my ears. That's several things, what you said there. I've been saying this for a long time, that one of the things that I love about this work is the people that I get to meet through it. I mean, I really meet them, you know? Like they got the like those experiences in that room. That's a connection. You know? That is a meaningful connection for me, first and foremost. I mean, I can verify that, and I'm assuming them as well. It's a wonderful, I can't think of anything better to do with my time, professional time, than to teach this stuff. And so, you know, it does as much for me, and has done and will continue to do as much for me as anybody. And then, you know, getting to come here, and this is the second time I've been here to do a workshop. And I mean, and you've been to four now. That's one of the fastest ways to get good at this, is to see it done live. Something different about it. And as far as, you know, enjoying, that's another thing that you said that I'm just like, that's heaven for me to hear. People enjoying the certifications. You know who enjoys those certifications too? This guy right here. Shit is fun, man. It's super fun. I look forward to class. I get up in the morning. I've got a couple classes to teach. I'm looking forward to those classes. And you know, that's part of the magic too. So, you know, how many times have you heard me say that Enlifted is a team sport? It's a team sport. Yeah, and, you know, with your session, which I remember, what we did with them in there, and, you know, Jason, the other Jason, and Jamie, the same thing happened each time. And the stuff that you've done, the woman that said that she did a session with you, and it's just feeling different and smiling more. If she's smiling more, that means she's breathing better. Yeah. They go hand in hand. And we got the stories written down.
Well, from a helper standpoint, right? So, you know, or being a coach, I mean, I look at it just from the being a therapist. I definitely didn't become a therapist to make money. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of other shit you can do.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of people out there making good money doing it, but that's not a field that people join because it's lucrative. I want to help people. Mm. And so today was just validation of the process. And I knew it. Like, I knew the day I watched you at Heather's at Sweat Equity, I said to myself, and it was like a goal. I didn't know it was going to turn into what it turned into, but I remember saying, I have to have that. I have to do it. I have to be part of it. I just have to have it. It took about, I think, probably a year before it came back around. And so hearing her say that, it's not about ego. It's like, I feel and felt effective today. And that's what a helper wants to do, right? Yep. I think as coaches, as people who are, as an educator, I want to be effective. I want people to, and you're somebody who's legit. And I just want to throw this out there because I think it's important. Part of this thing on this podcast that I've been really intentional about is making sure that guests are seen. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like, you know, if you're out there a lot, you know, people make up stories and they see. So everyone that's come on, There's things that I notice, and I've been hypervigilant due to the trauma in my life and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I'm real keen on people who are in, like, have traction. Like, you're out there, you've got a lot of people, you know, you're sought after, you've got a lot of stuff going on. People who have power and influence, I'm really keen on, like, on watching them when they say things. Say, oh, okay, yeah, you said that. Oh, you said you're wide open. You said you enjoy this, or you just want people, you know, when they make these claims to sound sort of spiritually elevated or like really good humans. And I just want to share with the people, whoever listens to this, and you right now in front of me, like, you're legit, dude. Like, I mean that. Legit. I've had people say, I'm really good at reaching out, or I'm going to support you. And when you said to me, I was doing a talk and you said, hey man, like, I'll help you. Like, I'll run it through. My brain couldn't conceive of that. I'm used to, which is wild, because we're talking about substance use addiction treatment, right? Let's be real. Nobody's found the cure. No one solved it, but everyone, it seems like a lot of people in the field act like they got some proprietary shit and they're not going to share it. And I ask for help, or like, doors are locked. We're not going to. And I remember getting asked to do an Unlifted talk before I got certed. And I said, man, I wonder if that's cool with Mark. I wonder if there's like, is there like legal, you know what I mean? Like, trademark. I don't want to do anything to jeopardize the brand. Like, I want to be, you know, pay attention to that. You're like, bro, that's what we do. Like, open source. Let's do this. So I just really right now wanted to thank you for that piece, because it touched me, man. Like, it was a powerful moment for me. So,
dude, but you're welcome, man. It's one of the reasons that I do this stuff is because I so thoroughly enjoy watching students take this stuff and go for it. That just thrills me to no end. I cried when we graduated our first class of level 2 grads.
I believe it.
Yeah. I got off the cert, finished it, and I boohooed, because I now, and there was 36 people on that cert. I now had 36 people that I could talk to in depth about this stuff. Nerds. And I also know how good it feels. How good did it feel to be able to run those workshops like you did?
Oh, dude. Like, so here's the thing. I have wanted for so long something that was, I've been describing your process as a surgical tool. In the psychological realm, it's a surgeon's scalpel, because it cuts through all of the stuff, and it's, the mechanics are solid. It's very concise. And I've felt like I've had some good talks when I talk about my personal story. I'm animated. I have good stage. People have given me, and I'm starting to own that stuff for myself, but I knew I was lacking this thing, and it's Unlifted filled that for me, where I can come into any, I mean, this stuff you could do anywhere. It doesn't matter. Like, I've been talking to people who own, like, a friend of mine. I reached out and said, hey, man, I know he's got a realty firm. Like, this could go anywhere. I didn't want to just be not stuck, but confined to one area. I wanted to be able to go in front of and move people. So I do think there's a lot of stuff in the substance use recovery realm that a lot of people would benefit from, you know, the accountability and the way that recovery can happen for people. So this is that tool. So, yeah, I'm like, I can't get enough. I mean, sometimes I'm like, I wonder if he's going to get annoyed, you know, like, I know you won't, but in the back of my mind, I did that talk recently. And right after that, the same guy who coordinated the talk for the spiritual care network that I did, he said, hey man, I have like 200 people on a Zoom call. We want you to do this thing again. And you had said in classes, like, this shit's going to happen. So get ready. So yeah, I'm stoked.
We're playing by the same rules, or cut from the same cloth. I very much enjoy. Let me back up. This to me, I am as much of a student of this game as anybody. and will stay that way. It will stay that way. It is a path. It's a practice. It's an art. And it is a craft, transformational wordsmithing. And I like testing my skills and taking it into different arenas, different environments. One of many examples, first week of April 2018. And I remember that because I just had my arm ripped out of socket in a jiu-jitsu class. And I flew there. So Mike Bledsoe and I can bring this up later because it is relevant in the storytelling and also what happens when we get control over our story and we can pull the levers on it as opposed to it, you know, driving us, which is the case for most people. Mike Bledsoe and I, we go to a jiu-jitsu class in Phoenix. This is late March, very late March 2018. And I go in there and roll around and get my arm ripped out of socket. My jiu-jitsu it deserves to be in a museum. These guys were 10th Planet guys, which they smoke a bunch of weed and they're hippies. And they come up with new weird ways to twist people in the wrong direction.
Rip your arm out of a socket.
Yeah, exactly. And so that happens, and it was an absolute nothing burger. Okay, it was a non-issue immediately as soon as it happened. It was just is what it is, was what it was, And so then, yeah, so I, 3 days later, I fly to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and then we drive to Bartlesville. So we're on the conversation about, you know, using this in different environments. I go to Bartlesville, and in the morning, I give 2 90-minute workshops to 20 polymer scientists.
Oh, wow.
From Chevron Phillips, and then get in the car and immediately drive and give a 2-hour goal setting workshop to 50 women in a recovery program.
Oh, wow.
All of them had anklets. I mean, they'd done some good work. And trust me, they were very different crowds, but the message was still the same.
Mm-hmm.
None of them had written out goals. It was all goal setting, and then language games and stuff like that. And, you know, whether they were polymer scientists or, you know, women cleaning up their life, the process was the same. Let's think about our thinking. Let's pick up a pen, get some of these words down, and start changing them and see what happens. Because it has nothing to do with intelligence, you know? I can piss myself off in the exact same mechanical way and to a very similar degree as Einstein can if I believe that she did that to me. If Einstein said she did that to me, he's going to create, or Neil deGrasse Tyson or whoever is the guy now, he's going to create the victim-villain mental mm-hmm. imagery and create the field, the stress response. I'm going to do that too. Same with anyone in that room, because 2 + 2 = 4. There's only so many ways we can piss ourselves off with the English language, and it goes past English. Eventually, once we get the curriculum for the certifications, and we'll have it done, we'll have everything done by 2030, and then we're going to go in different directions. We're going to go into different languages. There's only so many ways someone can piss himself off in Turkish. There's only so many ways someone can create the their victim mentality in Russian or Thai or Spanish.
That's wild.
Yeah, yeah. And it's we got plenty of stuff to do. And including, you know, helping people in recovery recover. Because I've been thinking about this podcast. Yeah, I've had a lot of pavement in front of me. I've got way more, but you know, I drove from Virginia, started driving about 10 days ago. And do you think that the terminology, the language in the recovery space is playing to the least common denominator?
And what do you mean by that? I'm not sure.
So someone has to be in recovery. So everybody's in recovery, this perpetual process of being in recovery, never recovered.
Yeah, I think the group from a 12-step, what would you call group norm, or sort of the, there's some contention between the idea of always being in this process of recovering, recovered, and neither one of those. So like there's like almost three positions. It's like people identify, and this was something that I share with you, right? I've been doing this sober thing. It'll be 21 years in September. It's
congrats.
Like, yeah, it's a pretty long time for me, especially the guy who used to drink in the shower and like show up to work with Secret Service and explosive dogs drunk and that kind of stuff. Get my weapon dry. It was bad. I'm also a disruptor, somebody with a lot of angst, somebody with a lot of righteousness, somebody who likes to, I like poking the bear, I like causing trouble. Like those are all pieces of my story, right? I'm also somebody who knows my energy can be challenging to others, and I create frequencies and rooms that can be challenging. And I've gone to 12-step meetings to start trouble in a, not in a physical way, but in a like, fuck you, I'm going to show you what's up. I'm not feeling good, or you think you know something. And I've picked the fights, and the fight is like the word recovered, and it's in our literature, like in 12-step literature, it says literally on the title page, you know, we're many hundreds of men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Some people will say you can't say that because you're not ever recovered. It's a constant. And I understand the semantics around it, right? I used to argue it just to be argumentative. Mm-hmm. And recently I woke up one day in the last probably, I don't know, it must have been the last 6 weeks. It's been in the last 8 weeks because it was the cert. It was in the cert. And I just had this realization. I cannot identify as alcoholic anymore. Like it doesn't work for me from a language perspective. Not that I want to forget what alcohol does to me. I will never forget that. Trust me. No one knows more about what alcohol does to me than me. There's plenty of people who suffered the damage, but internally I was destroying myself for years. And I had friends, I don't know if you know what the Tillman Foundation is, Tillman Military Scholars.
Pat Tillman?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so okay. I'm a Tillman Military Scholar. I got the scholarship in 2014. Super still cool. To this day, like, how did that happen? You know what I mean? I'm still one of those, like, why me? And I had some very smart friendships that came out of, they're amazing human beings. They came out of that organization. And they used to say things to me like, the language is very demoralizing and stigmatizing. And I'd be like, no, like, it's endearing. Like, it's positive for us. And I think I believed that for a long time. And I think if for some people, if it works for them, hey, I don't want to change anything. I'm not here to disrupt that. But for me, it doesn't work anymore. And that's the, when you say, I believe that I am recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, I totally believe that. I believe that I'm also in recovery on a regular basis from imposter syndrome, okay, in my story. And I think that's more of a threat to me than my alcoholism, to be honest with you. And this is what I wanted to share with you, and I don't know what your thoughts are on this. I just want to get it out of my mouth before I forget it. I don't have any stats. I haven't done any research. I haven't even done any reading. This is all anecdotal, me over the last 20 years working with people. It's hard to work in a space where there's so much failure. And I don't mean just on the individuals who are coming in, because it's real easy for people to say, and this infuriates me, there's a long history of programs saying things like, well, you must not want it, or you weren't ready, or so there's no like, let me take an inventory of my program and see if I'm bringing the right shit to you. It's like, let's just blame you because you must not be ready. What I've seen in the relapse stories and the cases, and there's been plenty of them over the years, and the lack of success, the common denominator for me watching, and I know this to be true for my life, people who have an amazing treatment experience, they'll do good work, they'll come out feeling fucking incredible, so much traction, and when they relapse, their story, it's the story.
It's the story.
They don't like themselves. They haven't figured out how to negotiate, renegotiate, cross the bridge to, I'm not a piece of shit anymore. It's the shame. The shame piece is, I believe, and I've seen, witnessed, shame for people with addiction is to, in my mind, the number one threat. And your process is, I'm discovering it just annihilates it.
The greatest of all time coaching question. What does this mean about mm-hmm. you? And, you know, no surprise, you bring up relapsing. I was thinking about that, especially after that workshop that I gave a week ago to that group of...
Were they just like, what the fuck?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When you, I wanted to ask you about that.
Oh, yeah. Did the exact same thing. Exact same thing. And as we did with your group today. And then I got off that call and I was thinking again about this podcast and I was like, thinking about relapsing and thinking about the meaning that they assign to it.
Oh, yeah.
That's because someone, I would imagine it's way more on the side of I'm a piece of shit, okay, versus these things happen, or I'm in the arena, or I'm going to try again, or not I'm going to try again, but something along the lines of me being okay versus me being not okay.
How about this? This is going to, Casey knows what I'm talking about. I relapsed and I'm making progress. That shit, I'm telling you, you know what I'm talking about, right, Kate? Like, so here...
It's the meaning that gets us, folks.
I started to reframe with people, because I've seen this, right? And here's the thing, I'm not taking up arms against 12-step recovery at all, in any sense, because it saved my life. Mm. It did. I'm also highlighting some things that don't work for the younger clients that I'm seeing, for sure, coming in, that will go to a meeting and they tell them to take the cotton out of their ears and stick it in their mouth because you don't have anything to say or that kind of stuff. It's that, right? And if abstinence is the goal and I had a relapse, then I failed. So we ask questions like this. Well, so you did the A to B thing, right? So take that. So if point A is when you started your recovery journey, go 1 year behind that. Well, I was using it every day. So you used every day for a year. And then on point A, you became abstinent. Okay, great. So from point A, a year later to point B, how many times did you use? Well, I just relapsed yesterday. Oh, you have 24 hours sober. Yeah. But how many times have you used in a year? 3. I went from 365.
Gotcha.
To 3. And I'm a failure. That's what we see on a regular basis. And they are destroying themselves with that narrative. Because they haven't been able to frame it to, oh, it's a success. I could learn from this.
It's the greatest of all time question, coaching question. What does it mean? What does it mean? So when I first got introduced to this work, and then when I first started working professionally, it was at a cleansing resort on an island in the Gulf of Thailand called The Spa. And I mean, you've heard this story, and very spiritual, very woo-woo. People talked a lot about healing. Oh, I'm healing from, or I've been healing my relationship with my father, or I'm still in the healing process. Then people, I'm a healer. That's a whole other conversation. And what I noticed, and I did this too, is that, and it parallels, at least the way I see it, healing and recovery, they parallel each other. And what I've noticed is that there's a certain part of people's identity that gets the button pushed on it when you help them take out the word healing and put in healed.
Mm.
I'm healed. Okay, yeah, it's not quite here yet, but it's, you know, same thing. You haven't gone on the vacation to Italy yet, but you've bought the tickets. Okay, it's coming. You're expecting it. So let's use some words around this to solidify the end result of why you're doing all this. And what I've noticed, I mean, it's very common, is that people get caught in a healing cycle, a cycle of always healing, and part of them likes it. Part of them wants it that way because it keeps them safe from going and creating the life or trying to create the life that they would and failing if they were healed. So what would you go do if you were healed? Oh, I'd go do this and that and all these things, and I'd be start my own business and all this stuff. And so it's this slick, sneaky way of keeping a glass ceiling on ourselves so we don't get exposed to potentially failing. The fear of failure, creating a new and better life, keeps a lot of people from claiming healed and keeps them rummaging and in the process of never having to go for stuff.
Well, and as you're talking, I'm thinking about in the background, that story that's running is, I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough. Dude. So if I'm moving in a direction of this other life that has these positive benefits, it means I'm going to have to confront this story that I don't know how to confront because I've tried. And I was terrified, man. This is not a dramatic effect. People who know me would tell you, I have broken down, analyzed myself more than the average bear. Like for 20 years it's been, and I can explain it. And I knew I had my story and absolutely believed it 1000% because I knew how much effort I was putting into trying to change how I saw myself. Didn't matter how I performed. Didn't matter how good I was. Didn't matter how many people I helped. I mean, there's a long line of people that would say, and I know this isn't true, but they would say, he saved my life. He saved me, that kind of stuff. And I knew the power of how I hated myself and was not worthy was never going to change. And that's why I would get suicidal, because it was hopeless. Like, putting out so much effort to, like, do things differently and perform, and then have a bunch of people be like, if you could just see yourself the way I see you, if you could just, you have so much, you're so amazing. And I know they think they're doing you a service, and that all it did was make me feel worse. And in a very bad way. So I was terrified of the critic, the Billy, right? The Billy story. And when we did that exercise in the CERT, I was like, holy shit. Like, Ben and I were just talking, I just met him for the first time. Mm-hmm. He was like, yeah, on day one, I was like, damn, this is totally worth the money, the price of admission, just on day one in the CERT. And then you end up with all these other pieces to the puzzle. And I had that experience over and over in the level one CERT, where it was like, oh, cool, we got this piece of information. This is like enough. Like, this is probably what we're going to work on for the next. And then it's like, no, we're going to do this other four-step piece. And then we're going to have these other tools and these language games. So the combination of everything, now I have a ton of hope about my story not coming back, you know, to, I don't know if that makes sense to you, but
yeah, it makes perfect sense.
I was so locked in it. So locked in it.
And just it's I forget the term. Chris Williamson was talking about it. He said it's a red flag green flag conversation. He said a major red flag in relationships is someone that can't bring themselves down from a curveball. So something happens, like they get a flat tire, or they get a ticket, or to get an email, they get in a fight with, and they're just upregulated for a long period of time. Mm. Okay. A green flag is when something happens to someone, and these people do way better in relationships. And they just, and it's the same thing. And I told you all this on the beginning of the CERT. I'm not promising you a perfect mind. Okay. I don't have one. And you know what? I don't need one. Okay. What I am saying is going to happen is that the intensity and duration of this shit ass voice in your head is, it's going to get less intense and less frequent. And that's all we need. Okay. How many amazing things have people done with part of them going kicking and screaming? Once I got my head around that, because dude, I thought that I could fast my dark side out of me. I thought I could meditate my dark side out of me. I thought I could plant medicine my dark side out of me. Just throw in the bubbling potions and we'll, you know. I thought I could supplement. Dude, I probably spent $100,000 on supplements. And then he just keeps going. Healing sessions and eventually I was like, dude, what if you're good enough? Not perfect, not great enough. What if you're good enough? What if? Talk about something. What if? What if you're good enough to go do the thing that you know you can with all that stuff out of the way or with the volume turned down on it? And I'm in the process of doing that. It's like, I'm good enough to get in front of 25 people and run a Razor's Edge workshop for an hour and change. I'm good enough to go do it two times next week and then four on the way back to Virginia. It's like, it's such a cool place to get to. If God came down and he said, this is all you get. You're as good as you're going to get. I'd go, cool. I can go do everything that I've got my sights set on, or at least take a real good swing at it with the version of myself that I have right now. Mm-hmm. I had a guy, we went on a walk and talk. I met him for the first time. He does some editing work for guys' podcasts. We go on and he goes, and you know, he asked me a bunch of questions and good dude. And he goes, what's standing in the way of you doing all these things that you just told me that you're going to do? And I immediately answered, nothing. So there's nothing in the way. And he couldn't get his head around it. And I told him, I was like, listen, man, all I got to do is just keep doing. We're going to get better at it. Okay. We're going to get better at it. Better and better at it. And it's just time. It's time and reps. We've got the team. And you know what? Of course, I'll still keep. I semi-recently reinstalled my meditation practice. I felt good without it. Feel even better with it. Felt good enough without it. Feel even better with it. Cool. So, of course, there's things that I can do and am doing, and it's like sometimes the stuff is just not that big of a deal. You just go, at some point in time, I mean, it's the same shit I was telling those people out there. Tell yourself you're good enough and go after the thing like you're good enough. Of course, do the back work, backstory work, but you know, I'm rambling on a little bit, but it's fun. It's an understatement to get our story working for ourselves.
So when you say that, it makes me think of, you did it in this workshop and I've heard you before where, and it's similar to it's a different way of saying it. And I like your way much better where, hey, we've been casting spells that don't work for us. Dude. So why not play the game of casting spells that do work for you? And the conversations that I've had with people in recovery over the course of time have been, look, you're making up shit about yourself that ain't working and it sucks. So why not make up some shit about yourself that actually works? Because you're already buying into a story that's totally bullshit.
Dude, how about this? They've been sober for a year and they say things like, I haven't made any progress.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
That's the power of our words. It can, you know.
When you were saying about the supplements and all this stuff, and here's the trap that I think a lot of people in recovery fall into. I certainly did. I tried to help other people to keep my dark side at bay. And it works for a really long time. And there's actually part of the literature talks about nothing else so much as ensures immunity from the first drink as intensive work with others. Mm. So I latched onto that. And it was my interpretation, but I'm just going to do this. And then it becomes really easy to do that because now I don't even got to fucking look at myself. I can just like, why do I got to do all this extra work? I'm just going to help you, right? And there's a term for that too in the 12-step arena. So when you were talking, I said, yeah, I've tried it all. I mean, I do the workouts, the everything, supplements, going to different religious practices. But the thing that I put most of my effort into for the last 20 years has been avoiding myself and helping other people. Mm-hmm. And the 2 years ago is when I had to stop. And I literally, this is true. My friend Ephraim will tell you. So I moved in with him. 4 days off of that Whataburger pistol gonna take my life thing situation. And it was about a month in. And I was a canine guy. I mean, when I got sober, the guy who brought me the message said, I was like, I mean, I was looking at 20 years and Leavenworth, I was in bad shape. And the guy was talking to me and I met him at an AA meeting. And I was talking to him later that night and he was asking me what I'd been up to. And I tell him about, you know, working with canine, and everyone would leave the canine training center for the weekend. And I would get a bottle of Jack Daniels out of the fridge and go lock myself in my dog's kennel. Poor bastard. Like, he couldn't go anywhere. I'm just going to drink and cry and like sob into this dog. And he said, have you ever thought about what dog spelled backwards is? And it floored me because it's like, oh, the whole time I was like crying myself to sleep, it was like God was protecting me. Like, there was, you know, a being kind of spared from disaster. And at that moment, I just lost my train of thought. That I haven't thought about that in a really long time. So I love dogs. That's what I was getting at. And he had a dog. His name's Melvin, Pitbull Rescue. And he said, you know the difference between the other guy that lives here, how I can tell when it's him that comes home and you? And I said, how? And he said, because he always says hi to the dog. And I was like, brother, I ain't got it, dude. I got nothing. Like, I got to preserve all my energy. Like, I was literally taking every second all day just kind of spare myself. I didn't have anything to give anymore. I was like, for the first time in my life, like, nope, I can't give. I got to just be with me. That's the point it got to, as far as like, you know, giving to a boy.
And just working with people relentlessly got you to that
and
place.
And reason I'm telling you this story, not just to like flap my gums, is to say the other part of the Unlifted method that is fucking so amazing, the amount of effort it takes on the part of the helper is like an eighth of what I'm used to. I'm in it, like, in trauma bond drama, but just involved, like wanting the best for people, having so much of my own pain and being like, can't you see this freedom right around the corner? And like, not the cheerleader type, but more the, I am with you. Like, and in recovery, it's kind of, it can happen a lot where you're so motivated. And if you're really passionate, you can do more work than the people who are trying to get well. So, you know, I did that for a really long time. And they call it burnout, compassion fatigue. There's a lot of terms for it. It's just not a healthy way to do business. So I'm relieved at this method in the cup, the, you know, the
I've hand. Done that. I've totally done
really?
That. Oh, yeah. I get it. It's hard baked into the DNA of the Unlifted method to unwind that codependency, that relationship. Yeah. And then, There's way more space. Those two words again. There's way more space. There's way more clarity. There's way more. It majorly getting that codependency unraveled majorly increases the rhythm of the coach. Okay, the rhythm, the timing. How important is timing?
Yeah.
It's one of the things you were watching in that room is timing, rhythming, waiting for the right time, boom. And then also majorly increases, and you just said it in the way that you did, majorly increases the emotional gas tank of the practitioner, because it's not that kind of heavy lifting. Okay, it's not that it doesn't have the expenditure of, you said you weren't a cheerleader, but a rah-rah cheerleading coach, smarty pants, I know all the right answers for you.
That was definitely me for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And all the stuff that I bust on, I've done it way more than once, which is why I bust on it. I know what I'm talking about. And it is a refreshing way to work with people. And then people feel that too. You know, people feel that when there's not bizarre expectations for them to transform. And you saw it twice, three times in that room. I asked one of those women, the woman in the front, would you like to read that sentence for the first language game? She was like, no, I just moved on over. I'm Switzerland out there, dude.
Yeah, that's new for me. So I've always been the guy that's been like, no, we're going to do this right now.
Yeah, yeah. And my train of thought is, one, it feels way better for me to be cool. Oh, you want to go in there? Great. You don't want to go in there? Great. It's the exact same. And then in my little world, she's going to get more out of that interaction than if I was like, you know, you really should go into this stuff. Like, I know what she needs to do. Absolutely. I do not know what she needs to do, nor do I want to know what she needs to do. All I'm there to do is to play the game with the people who want to play. And then another woman next to the guy with the cane, I asked if she wanted to read her thing, and she goes, no. And I'm like, cool. And I just came over.
That was his mom.
Yeah. Yeah. Came over and worked with that. And then same girl in the front with the language game. I was like, hey, you want to? Because I was trying, man.
We had a little bit of a, we were kind of joking about that. Like, she basically was like, fuck you, I'm not playing. So you know what, Mark? I don't even have any feelings. So, like, peace out.
Yeah. And I was like, maybe I can get her with the tuning fork. Yeah. She was like, uh-uh. And I'm like, cool. I said it earlier, you know, everybody, she didn't get up and leave. No one got up and left. They were in the room. And if they're in the room, they get some of the magic, because that's a team sport.
Here's the thing, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but holy shit. The other thing about this process, I saw it recently with a talk that I was able to give with it, and a woman came up and she said, I just want to thank you for, sometimes it feels like I have to be at these things, like these events, and you and your topic were like, made me feel like I want to be here.
Oh,
and what I noticed out there is the same, it's all at all of them, right? It's that you're obviously an amazing presenter. You've been doing it a long time. And on top of that, the information casts a spell over the entire room. So you're under a spell during the talk. And real quick, I wanted to give another thank you for a long time in my work as a therapist. I had a edgy sort of judgment towards people who weren't either therapists or didn't go to school to get their degrees, because there's a lot of opportunity for people to take advantage of people. And in the substance use realm, there certainly had been a lot of that. And I was witness to it, and I was traumatized by it. And so I was real judgmental. And, you know, it's a coaching model, but it is, in my opinion, one of the most potent forms of therapy that I've ever participated in, as far as for myself and then with clients. And here's the thing. Remind me, the next time we get together, I want you to experience, have you ever heard of 9D breath work?
No.
Oh, what's that? God, dude. It's like nine-dimensional sound, headset, guided breath work. It's like an acid trip it's absolutely incredible. It's Casey's jam. Like, Casey, so we joke. He's as excited about 9D breath work as I'm as excited about Enlifted. Like, it's like an equal. I didn't think we'd have time this trip, but the next time you come, I definitely want to get you on it. But as a therapist, and this is only as a result of being certified by your process, I am now realizing in session, I never fucking paid attention to my breath. I don't even know how many sessions I've done in my career, right? But like, I've never in a session been like, oh, make sure I'm low and slow. Make sure I'm low and slow. It's just been, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. We're in this. And I'm now seeing like, oh man, I have put some fuel on some people's activation with my own. You know what I mean? I've done a lot of stuff. And it's not, there's no judgment on myself right now. It's more like just awareness about you talk about the practice, right? Like my mindset, I want to be a master, and I understand that you just, it's just a constant practice, but the idea of, oh shit, there is so much to learn, you know, and to this day, I'm still, so that's the one thing I definitely want to share with you. I literally never pay attention to the breath.
That's par for the course when it comes to therapeutic situations. And it takes a while to not learn, because I explained it at least once out there about drama and trauma bonding and breathing low and slow, and I had people going like this and then writing it down. So they learned it. Okay, demonstrating it, though.
Integration.
So turning it into an unconscious competency, there's only one thing that does that. Okay, and for everybody, it's the same. It's reps. Mm. It's reps. Repetition, doing it, and then eventually it becomes that unconscious, that second nature. And you know, certain sessions will be easier to breathe through low and slow than others. Yeah, man. And you know, every time I run this stuff, I just. That's why I call the work regenerative. It's better than sustainable. Every time I sit down with somebody and I help them with some words. I just got better with my words. I just got better with my words. I just got paid to breathe. It's like.
And I said also, side note, I'm not a fan of individual sessions. My whole therapeutic career. Obviously, what I created here, I'm a group guy. Yep. I love the group. And you can throw me into a group at any point, and like, this is my jam. Ever since I started this process, I'm all about individuals too. It's been so refreshing. So I'm like, why am I all of a sudden my interest? Oh, it's because I know the formula. Like, there's not, it's almost as if, you know, I started this emotion and I said, I'm just going to wear an emotion shirt every day. Like, it's going to take my brain out of like, what do I wear? And it's branding.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. And it's very similar with the sessions where I know exactly what we're going to do because every session, I don't know where they're going to want to go and what story they're going to want to process, but I know what I'm going to do in this session. Yep. And every individual session as a therapist was not like that. It was like, oh my God, what do I got to do? I got to come up with something. I'm almost like creating every single time I sit down with somebody, which is fucking exhausting.
Majorly. And when we're talking about all the right answers coaching, what that means is it's exhausting for a variety of different reasons. One, you have to be smarter than every single person that you work with. That's not going to happen. And then also, the unspoken part of it is that in order for me to be able to give them the right answers, I need to be living all of this stuff myself.
Yeah.
And if someone is dealing with something that's similar to what I'm dealing with, and I tell them what they should do as the coach, but I'm not doing it in the background, then that turns me into an imposter in the back of my head. And that is Foxville for a practitioner.
Yeah, exactly. You're speaking right to me right now. So
Yeah. I mean, I've totally done that. I didn't know. I just didn't. Coaching in therapeutic space, it is still in its infancy, majorly in its infancy. And I can say that because of what I watch the average practitioner do, whether it's a psychiatrist, psychologist, a therapist, a coach, it's answers plus chest breathing.
And scripts.
Yeah. And scripts. Yeah. So it's exactly right. I got that.
They're writing, but they're just not writing the story. They're writing scripts.
Yep. Yeah. Yep, I got a prescription for you. I got the answer, okay, which is for why this is happening, and a label. Okay, you got this. Here's why, and here's some meds. And that right there is so trapped and confined. Okay. Where and it does, you know, there's the coaching side of it, which is where it goes for some people if they choose to allow themselves to evolve out of Luke Skywalker and into Obi-Wan and eventually into Yoda, which is out of that answers plus chest breathing to questions plus low and slow breathing. You ask somebody, and you saw it out there. If I can do that, anybody can do that. I'm up there, body relaxed, breathing low and slow, asking questions. And when I'm breathing low and slow, I'm demonstrating non-attachment to whatever their answer is. It's that no can defend shit.
Well, and I would add this, and I don't know if you've used this term or not, or even heard it, but you're attending. Hmm. You do it better than any therapist I've ever seen, which is saying a lot. I've seen a lot of somatic experiencing trauma work is where I really, they very intentional with like you're attending to the person because they're feeling stuff in their body. And yep. So I just wanted to add that too. What I witnessed from you when you present is phenomenal timing. The questions are spot on, but you're also very in tune with like where they're at. Like you, even the guy in the back, like you can see the facial expression change from across the room or the breath drop or the audible like up talk when that happens or when it's, you know, the downshift. And that to me is, it's really impressive and it's so, so effective because you're really paying attention with the detachment. You're seeing it, but you're not in it.
So much fun too, man. It's just, it's, and you're going to, I can already call it. You're going to end up doing a lot of workshops. You're going to get really good at this. You'll get as good as you want to. And it's just like I said earlier, it feels good. I mean, Paris Robinson, he had his, you know, he was a gangbanger and a friend of mine and got shot up. And
oh, that's the one you have to watch.
Yeah. Now, he doesn't work with people in that same way. And I helped him develop his public speaking skills because he was one of the greatest I've ever seen just naturally. And we paired up. We, I don't know, 25 workshops. I helped him deliver or presented with him a number of times. And now he's so good. I'm sure he's gotten better at managing the energy of it now. And when he would first start presenting, when he first started, he wouldn't be able to sleep that night. He would go give a talk and he wouldn't be able to sleep because he'd be so revved up. And this is how I knew that he was in the right place, man. So revved up. And he would just lay in bed reviewing in his mind all the things. And he goes, dude, because he never calls it, he's a black guy. He won't call it heroin. He calls it heron. He goes, man, this shit's better than heron. Giving talks is better than awesome, heroin. Man.
Yeah.
And dude, there's like, if someone was like, dude, you're doing two talks a day for the next 365 days in a row, I'd be like, sweet.
Yeah, that's what I want to, I mean, ask Casey, fun, like, that's all I've been talking about. I'm like, this is what I want to do. And here's the relief for me is when you ask somebody, and this has been me, and when I ask people about goal setting, when you can't foresee a future with the goods, like you don't believe you're worth it, like, you can ask me what I want to do. I'm going to bounce all over that question. I don't want anything to do with it because I don't want to face it. Oh, shit, that means it'll never happen for me. And with this, between the story work and all the stuff that I've been able to like get past and through on the changing of the story, now I can absolutely see it. Like I'm going to do, I haven't done it yet, but I'm going to write it out and put breath into it. Like the four step where it's what I want to do. I want to continue to grow this place and do all the things that we've set out to do and continue to help people. But I really want to educate and present to people who are in front of other people, like therapists. I feel like I'm in a unique position as a Enlifted coach, I don't know how many therapists you have, but like having been on the other side, I can go into a place where sometimes therapists might be like, well, you're just a coach. Like, you don't, you know what I mean? It's like that you don't know. And not that it's accurate, but that's a mindset of some people where I have the training and the education and all the other shit. And I could be like, look, I did it this way. And I'm telling you, my experience says, and the most recent talk was an example of that where people are like, I want to know more about that. Like, I want to know. I've got a couple people that work here as therapists, like, give me the, can I have the document? Like, I want to, like, yeah, let's do this, yeah. You know? So.
Dude, I'll, same thing with you, man. You know, what's in the way of you going and doing all that stuff? Nothing. You just keep doing it. Like, I know I'm going to keep doing this stuff. This thing has got me. I surrendered. I committed. It's happening. And, you know, and how many times did I say it on the cert? I was like, some of y'all are going to get bit by the bug. At least three or four times. Because I say it at least three or four times on every level one certification, because it always happens on every certification. Some people get into this and they're just like this. And it dovetails back to what you said. You know, people get into this line of work, coaching, because they want to have an impact. They want to help people. You know, that's why I got into it. And truth be told, it was helping people second. Okay. I didn't know I was going to end up doing this thing for 50 years.
When did you know that?
I got a good story about that. I got into this stuff because I thought, I thought it was the coolest shit I'd ever seen. I was like, that's cool, and I want to get good at it. Oh, and by the way, I can be an asset to my community. I can be at service. And I was like, the money will be whatever. It
checks all the boxes, yeah.
It checks all the boxes. And yeah, so... and that's what gets people in, you know, very rarely do people start off coaching thinking, okay, I'm going to make mid-level six figures with this. And so I'm going to go into that arena. It's I want to help people. I want to make an impact. That's what gets them in the door. What keeps them in the room is making a profession out of it, making a living. So I was a horrible, terrible, destructive, not disruptive, destructive student. In school, I terrorized people. I was a bully. I let off more stink bombs in high school than I let off so many. My grandma would mail me cartons of stink bombs from Tennessee, and in between every single class, I'd walk around the halls smashing them. Then they never caught me. I broke the administration. They came over the loudspeaker. This is in halfway through my senior year, and they said please. They said please, please. Whoever's doing this, please stop. And they tried to find out who was doing it. Nobody would rat me out, and they said please stop. I was
like, stop. That's awesome,
dude. I'd bring possums to school and sling them, and I did, it was because I was bored, man. I was super bored. I didn't know that was the case at the time. I just thought I was stupid because everybody else can sit here in a chair for X amount of hours a day and pay attention to who cares about this stuff. Anyway, yeah, the first time I ever fell in love with something on site, taking out a few beautiful women, was the first time I wrestled in high school. That was cool. First time I got choked in a jiu-jitsu class. I'm like, whoa, what's that? Have to learn. The second time was when I saw that out there for the first time in 2003. And I was like, that's the coolest shit I've ever seen in my entire life. And then, you know, that was in 2003, 2007, January 17th, 2007, after studying a bunch and, you know, getting practice, I put my flyer up at that spa in Thailand, where I saw the place for the first, where I saw this stuff for the first time. I ended up being a practitioner there. And 10 years later, 10 years, full time, I find myself on stage at TEDx RVA.
Wow.
Have you seen that? I'll send it to you. It was a major step up in presenting competition. Up until that time, I had presented in front of 300 people. This was 1,800 people in my hometown at the Carpenter Center, a beautiful venue, live streamed to 155,000 people around the state, recorded forever on the internet. Okay, no pressure. And this is one of the reasons why we've got such chops in level two. For the second half of level two is presentation skills and how to run workshops. And because we've done so much of it and we're good at it. And so we prepare for 3 months for that. Date with Destiny, if you want to get all Tony Robbins about it. And knock that shit out of the park.
Nice.
12 out of 10. Oh, and by the way, at the time, so TEDx RVA had done 5 TEDx's. At the time, this is before lockdowns. Remember that? there were 5,000 TEDx's out there. And each year, they were in the top 10. Not 10%, the top 10 as far as production. I mean, they were it. And so, you know, I get on stage and deliver, and knock it out of the park. I walk off stage, out the back door, through the alleyway, 3 blocks over to my hotel room, open the door, close the door, lock the door, get on the bed, sit on the bed, back up to the wall. And I just see this fucking thing. I go into some altered state. And rewinding, you ever heard of NLP?
Yeah.
Yeah. So in 2011, I went over to London and did a 5-day practitioner training with Richard Bandler, who's one of the founders. The next year, I went back and did a 7-day master practitioner training with Richard Bandler. 12 days. Oh, by the way, everybody, you can't master something in 12 days. You can't master something in 12 years. I went there to watch him work. And I walked out of there. This is what I got out of it. He goes, I've been doing this shit for 40 fucking years. And I'm in the crowd. There's, I don't know, 1,500 people. And I'm staring at him and I go, I wonder what that feels like. Mm. And then I was screwed. Didn't know it at the time. Because guess what? There's only one way to answer that question. What does it feel like to do something?
You got
to
do it. Yeah.
For 40 years. And then, excuse me. And then, so I'm having this out-of-body experience after TEDx. And I go, I commit. I'm going to do this for 50 years. I'm going to see what I can pull off in 50 years. I want to find out what it feels like to do one thing for 50 years. And because I had no questions. I had no more questions. This thing had held my attention the whole time. The worst student ever to live on Earth. It held my attention the whole time. It held my attention, my fascination, my interest, my appreciation, my respect. It's not coaching. It's way more than that. It's transformational wordsmithing. Those were alchemical interactions that were happening out there. The heat of this stuff. And so I go, okay, you got me. I'm in. And I got out my calendar and I scrolled down to January 17th, 2057. It's in my calendar. It took a while to get down there. It's been in there since.
Wow. That's dope.
Yeah. I don't have any questions about what I'm going to do with my professional time. And you know what, the end results either. You know what, one thing would be cool. This would be cool for humanity, you know, to turn the victim mentality or playing the victim into something, you know, equally as cool as littering. That'd be cool, you know. So playing the victim, that's the equivalent of littering. Nobody likes somebody who litters.
Yeah.
Okay. That would do a lot for things, including the collective breadth of humanity.
Wouldn't do much for profits, but.
Oh, dude, that would derail and train wreck mega industries that are built off of the back of the individual, communal, and collective victim mentalities of humanity. A lot of parasitic organizations, and if I do dare say, go far enough, demonic. Luciferian, if we want to get all Rudolf Steiner about it, he said, that's an interesting cat. Any force that seeks to constrict or control is by definition Luciferian. And some of those spells that we were breaking out there were constrictive and controlling. And if there's a consciousness behind everything, which, you know, some people say there are, those were Luciferian spells. Find them, write them out, break them, and create space and clarity. And in that, I might sound really weird to people listening, but okay. Then I don't have to have the answers. When I know how to do that, I don't have to have any smarty pants answers for what someone needs to do with their life. I'm saying it again. I don't know what anyone needs to do with their life, and I wouldn't want to know. It would be weird if I wanted to know. Why would I want to know that? I do know why I would want to know that, and that's to elevate myself above them and make myself feel better about something that I haven't yet taken care of inside myself. The Enlifted Method, it levels the playing field. Like, there's no hierarchy, okay? It's just me and my skill set and how much space and clarity I can help that person create for themselves.
Which then in turn gives them the answers that they've possessed
1,000%
within anyway, so.
And it's a clean interaction. It's a clean interaction. It's clean coaching. It's one of the reasons why it's got the good vibe to it. It's like, what was the vibe in that room like afterwards?
It was dope.
It was so cool.
The guy was showing you the sample of the video or whatever, the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
His name's Frank, and when he walks into a building, the entire frequency changes. Mm-hmm. So I was like, Mother's Day, he was with his wife and his son today, but he would have loved the entire process. And when you brought the tuning fork out, I was like, oh, this is fucking dope. Like, this is, because it's all about frequency and vibration. Yep. And you can see it in the room. And that's a big room, right? So you're talking about like wavelengths, moving stuff. But individually, when that shift happens, whether it's to the breath or the facial, and I got to see one, the woman that said we work together today,
mm-hmm.
that was the most exciting part of our, aside from her getting relief, was to be able to see that through a Zoom call of like where it's like they get hit, like a basketball came out of the side, you know, you're like when you're playing ball and you get hit in gym class, you're a PE teacher, right? It was literally like her, they just jolt and then there's this release and it's like, holy shit. I've been after that the whole time I've been trying to work with people.
Yeah.
I really feel like, too, I'm super excited because the addition of, I mean, everyone here is going to be a coach at some point when I can afford it. Movement and Enlifted Method is a potent combination. That, to me, it's the ultimate combo. And so finding this has been, that's where my brain has been, this is the perfect addition to what we're doing.
You found us, we found you. dude, I get out of bed looking for people like yourself that want to learn it and go for it. That's more important to me than all the other stuff. You know?
I think that's one of the things I respect about you. And
I wouldn't trade what we're doing right now. I wouldn't trade our IP. I wouldn't trade our community. I wouldn't trade the work we've. I wouldn't trade. If someone put a bill, I'm serious when I say this shit. If somebody put $1 billion in this room right now, I wouldn't trade it. I wouldn't trade it.
Yeah. I think that commitment and myopic focus is something that I respect because I have it. I admire it. And I'm sure you know this. It can be a lonely fucking road sometimes, you know?
It can. It can be a party too. I'm here for all of it. It takes war to make generals. I want the shitty days. I want the celebrations. If I'm on the path, I'm good.
I like that.
Yeah. If I'm on the path, I'm good. And I don't, it's like, I'm doing this regardless of what happens. Like you'll get this. It's been this way for a while. This is a devotional practice for me. It is a devotional practice. It's like I get up and go to church every day. And me and life, we got an agreement. We got it. We made a deal. It's like, bro, if you do this, you'll have everything else you want. Because this is damn near everything else I want. And I really only pray for one thing, which is, you know, might be weird to say, but people are walking around acting like they're not going to die. People are walking around pretending like the clock ain't ticking, and it's ticking. And there's memento mori. Remember, you will die. There's only one thing I pray for, and it is a quick and meaningful death. That's it. I'll do this. Life, you can have that. You give me that. A quick and meaningful death. Because the one thing, it's like, deathbed regrets, that scares me to my core. That scares me to my core. What's worse? To have a slow, meaningful death.
Well, dude, I literally thank you from the bottom of my heart for
my pleasure.
For the commitment. It's like I was talking with Jamie about this. He decided to stay in detox. He was going to leave the day I met him. And I said, why don't you check this group out that I'm doing? And he stayed. And we have this thing on our channel. We were just fucking around, and Casey was filming it. We were testing out the stuff. And I said, well, what would have happened if you had left that day? And he was like, oh, I wouldn't have CrossFit, and I wouldn't. And I said, how many people wouldn't have been helped? How many people wouldn't have changed? How many people wouldn't have committed to a life that is benefiting them right now? And it was like mind-blowing for him. And I see that from the work that you're doing as well. It's like it's so meaningful and so purposeful, because we talk about mass effect. So I can work with one-on-one. I'm going to affect X amount of people. I train a fucking army of people.
Dude.
I'm going to affect this global change. So I definitely see Enlifted doing that. And I'm just grateful that we're in the boat for sure. So.
Dude, this is a long game conversation, buddy. We'll be doing a lot of podcasts together. Kim wants to have you on our show. We'll be doing a lot of workshops. This thing's just getting started, dude. It's just getting started.
I love that. Sweet, man. Well, thanks for letting me chat with you for a little bit.
My pleasure. Appreciate it, yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you for connecting with us on today's episode of the Emotion Podcast, where we discuss all things mental health. Connect every week as we explore incredibly intimate stories of persistence and hope. Delve into mental health education and explore valuable resources. Available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And visit emotionwellness.com for more information.